Dan to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but I'm here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Hey guys, welcome back to Let's Talk Wyoming. I'm Amy Edmonds, and today you get just me. No guests, no filters, just a good old-fashioned roundup of the news that's been swirling around the Cowboy State. Now, I've got interviews lined up for the fall, some national guests, I've got some state leaders. We're going to be talking about education, some back-to-school stuff. But today, I wanted to hit the pause and just take a moment to talk about what's really been happening in our backyard. There's been a lot of news that I have missed because it's been kind of a jam-packed summer. And so I wanted to take the time to kind of sift through some of the news that's happening and have a conversation. So think of it like coffee with a friend, okay? That's today. Friend being me and being, you know, a former state rep with a lot of strong opinions. So let's get into it. Okay, so first news I wanted to talk a little bit about was the Steamboat Legacy lawsuit. Obviously, first up, the Wyoming Education Savings Account Program was blocked by a district judge thanks to the lawsuit from the teachers union. So Wyoming's teacher union sued in June 13th, something around there, just as the program was about to dispense dollars to over 4,000 Wyoming families. And so Judge Frolicker, in that late June court hearing, issued a preliminary injunction halting the program. And the state has now filed its appeal to the Wyoming Supreme Court of that injunction. So our superintendent, Megan Degenfelder, is backing the challenge and rightly warned that if the injunction stands during the appeals process, that for the 2025-26 school year, it would probably be a total wash for all those families that had signed up and were moving forward with their children's educational experience. Let's be clear, the harm here isn't theoretical, and it isn't where the teachers union obviously convinced the judge. We have nearly 4,000 families who are approved for the program. These are real people, including pre-K. They're real people, they're real kids, and now they're in limbo because the teachers union claims that public schools would be harmed while this is making its way through the court. And the judge bought it, hook, line, and, you know, sinker. So we have real families that have been harmed and that are now, you know, basically in limbo, which is unfortunate. For now, the state has appealed that injunction. That'll go up to the Wyoming Supreme Court. It probably will take a little bit of time to get there, although I believe those are done fairly quickly because it's an emergency appeal. And let's hope that the state of Wyoming, that the governor's office through the AG's office, brings their A-team. I'd like to see the A-team. I'd like to see folks that are truly advocating for this scholarship program. So I will try to get to that appeal hearing when it happens. I was in the courtroom for the original injunction hearing with Judge Frolicker. So I will report back what I hear. All right, the next news story is pretty recent in Cowboy State Daily, and it just kind of blew my mind. So let's talk about this man called Troy Lake, 65-year-old diesel mechanic from Wyoming who's currently serving time in federal prison. What was his crime? Well, he removed EPA-mandated emission systems from trucks and rewrote the code so that they'd still run, something that truckers wanted, most of these owners of these vehicles wanted, and frankly needed to keep their rigs from sort of choking to death on their own exhaust, or at least that's how the article explained it. I mean, let me be clear. I'm not a gearhead. I don't know anything about it. I mean, I don't know anything intimately about a diesel machine. What I know is that apparently these diesel trucks are manufactured to have some kind of dead man switch that if you tamper with the EPA emission system, they go dead or something like that. When the federal government decides to make an example out of someone who ran a legal business for decades, I don't think that's justice. It really is a form of tyranny. The fact that he's in prison for what? An environmental crime? I mean, for what? For what most people in the West who are doing so much of the work around energy for our nation would say is ridiculous, is horrendous. How can anyone say that our society, our community is better served when a 65-year-old man running a successful business, paying his taxes, is going to go to jail for a year? It's a huge travesty of justice. So we'll see. But Mr. Lake, in the meantime, is asking President Trump for a pardon, and I hope he gets it, because I have issues with what most of us can say have been abuses of the pardon power in recent years, but this is exactly what the presidential pardon should be about. Honest American citizens being thrown in jail for a crime that really shouldn't even exist, and certainly a jail time crime that should not exist. I just think that's ridiculous. That is exactly what the pardon power is for. It's to correct outrageous government overreach, because the only thing being polluted here is common sense. I mean, the minute I read that story, I thought, you have got to be kidding me. So to Mr. Lake and his family, I hope he gets his pardon. I hope he gets out of prison very soon. I know that we just had a ruling from the EPA under the Trump administration pulling back some of these emission standards. I hope they also do that for these heavy diesel trucks and allow folks to have their trucks running at the level that they should. Like I said, I am not an expert, but I did talk to some diesel owners, including my husband, and these systems apparently really are terrible. They're terrible for the engines. They're terrible for the mileage on those trucks. They're terrible for the overall running of them. And the fact that this man did such a brisk business and had so many customers can show you how unpopular those emission systems obviously were. So I am not one to say that people should break the law easily. I mean, I'm a big law and order girl, big one, but this one is ridiculous, ridiculous. And so I hope Mr. Lake gets his pardon and gets to come home to his family, because no one is served with him sitting in a federal penitentiary in Colorado next to gang members and drug dealers and murderers. That's ridiculous. Okay, next story. And I talked a little bit, I mean, I guess I just mentioned last week about the silly season, right? Right now is the silly season, everybody. It's this time of year when we're coming into the fall of the non-election year and everybody's starting to think ahead about who's running for what, what's going to happen, what's going on. There's all this jockeying for position, right? All this stuff going on. But we've had a couple news stories about it, so we're going to talk about it. So let's talk a little bit about politics. Specifically, there's a news story about some new group called the Project Winchester that's popped up that wants to spend its time attacking Congresswoman Harriet Hageman on her votes for federal lands, the sale of federal lands to private entities. They've apparently launched an anonymous website accusing her of siding with the DC elites over federal land sales. And they're using, I guess, a Winchester rifle as their logo, obviously, hence Project Winchester, which is obviously evokes a very Western theme out here, which is great. So they have one gentleman who is named Trevor Nielsen. He's a tech CEO from Jackson who says he's going to raise a large amount of money to oppose her. I spent a little bit of time looking into Mr. Nielsen, and he's definitely an impressive fellow on paper. I have no doubt he'll probably be able to raise some funds. Now, it was interesting to me the response that Representative Hageman's team had. They responded by kind of sidestepping the discussion of the federal lands, and instead they sort of accused this group of anonymous threats, I guess, and suggested that maybe the rifle imagery was somehow menacing. I thought that was it feels like spin, like maybe Representative Hageman doesn't want to talk about her vote on land sales. Well, she didn't actually vote on this was Senator Mike Lee's amendment to the budget reconciliation bill, which we've talked about in podcast past. The House didn't vote on it. It was stripped out by the Montana representative. His name escapes me. And then went over to the Senate. It was put back in. There was a huge kerfuffle. Ultimately, it got pulled out as well. However, Representative Hageman has spoken support. She really does believe in the sale of federal lands, or at least some of them. I don't want to mischaracterize her views, but she has certainly been more in support, or has spoken publicly. But this response was odd to me. I mean, it's not odd. It's just a clever sort of spin, sidestep spin. This is what you do when you don't want to address the main issue. You say, and they basically said that somehow she'd been threatened. Now, I mean, obviously, I don't think she was, and obviously she wasn't threatened physically. These are political people coming up to say, we're going to raise an effort to oppose this person. Being opposed in whatever re-election or, you know, office you're going for is not a threat. It's just a reality of politics. So with the 2026 election cycle sort of shaping up and getting, people are sort of getting west, what we can see in this whole news article is that it's obviously going to be the wild, wild west next year. We're going to see big money. We're going to see big personalities. We're going to see even bigger mudslinging. That's 100% guarantee. And voters are going to be bombarded with leaflets, mailers, digital ads. Like, we're going to think we're under an invasion. That's the reality. That's absolutely true. And it's going to be really important that people have trusted sources of news to go to get the real story, or spend more time as voters actually looking up the people running for office, finding their contact information, calling them, talking to them personally, talking to somebody who may know them personally, because otherwise we're going to see, you know, people falling for a lot of mudslinging that's probably going to be as ugly as, and well, probably even uglier than it was in 2024. So this news story for me was, number one, showed that the Hageman camp kind of wanted to sidestep the issue in their response to it. And number two, it's a portent of things to come. It's obvious that we are going to see big money, big personalities, and even bigger mudslinging in 2026, which is why you all need to be here listening to Let's Talk Wyoming, because we will give you the scoop. Obviously, this is a podcast where I'm giving my opinion, but I try to be as fair as I possibly can. And I certainly want to hear both sides, and I try not to misrepresent. That's what most people are looking for, right? The opportunity to hear without a huge amount of spin. Podcasts like mine, I mean, there are other podcasts in the state. I'm going to have Lily Crago on. She's a lovely girl over at the University of Wyoming who has a podcast and is trying to talk more to folks of her generation. You know, there's just a lot of good ones. I think, you know, Joey Corinti and I have done a sort of a hybrid podcast together. We'll keep doing more of those. So just more opportunities to go out and listen to folks and hear news, because we are going to have a crazy Wild West election cycle next year. Okay, next story, and this is kind of in the same vein in terms of what I just said about folks going to trusted sources for news. I never got to comment, but I wanted to, about PBS. So Congress recently pulled federal funding for PBS, and Joanne Kale, who is the CEO of Wyoming PBS, wrote a knockout guest op-ed in response. It was in the Cowboy State Daily. It was so good. If you've not had an opportunity, and I'm going to link all these news stories in the show notes, so you can go to them if you haven't read them, but I will link her piece. I'll just read one quote. She said, "When PBS stopped listening, viewers stopped watching." It was probably one of the best. And like, this is what I want to say to people when they feel such frustration over sort of the political spin of the left and the right and how everybody's just sort of yelling at one another. Nobody's talking. Her op-ed was so amazing because she owned the problems, right? In the sense that she pointed out exactly what PBS had been doing wrong, that they'd stopped listening. They started having this elitist attitude that they knew better, that they were going to shove this kind of viewing down people's throats. And then people started pulling away, and they still didn't catch on. And they doubled down, and they stopped listening even to, right, the local stations, because as she points out, PBS was intended to create content to supplement local stations. So Wyoming PBS, which is different from the national PBS, has its own set of folks like Joanne, who's the CEO, who create unique programming, storytelling, news telling for the audience here in Wyoming. Wyoming PBS in general, like I don't spend a lot of time watching. I mean, I'm probably like the rest of you. I'm a huge Masterpiece Theater watcher. My husband and I love all of their stuff and watch very regularly everything that they create. But we haven't watched a lot of, outside of like the political news stories that they do around the legislative session, which I have real value. Lawmakers are invited on. They talk about different issues. They talk about ELC for the budget. That kind of news making is good. Especially, and the next story I'm going to talk about, I'll just allude to it, especially in light of, you know, we just saw a newspaper close down its doors from Illinois, but it meant that, what, I forget, 8 Wyoming towns are going to lose their small town newspapers. The fact that more and more sort of news is going away in our smaller communities makes it harder and harder for people to really get the news or to know what's going on in their communities. And so even PBS has the ability to do that kind of stuff. I just recently interacted more with them upon the death of Al Simpson, Senator Al Simpson, because my husband and I, in looking for, watching his funeral, stumbled upon some stories they had done about the Simpson family, PBS, in sort of in their story making human interest stories. And because the Simpson family is so much a part of the history of the state of Wyoming, that they were really, really good. It was really interesting storytelling. So that's the kind of stuff that people want to see of PBS, not all of the political spin nonsense. So if you have a chance, and if you have not read Joanne Kale's op-ed piece for Cowboy State Daily, I would highly, highly recommend it. She really did what we need to see more leaders and thinkers do, which is she owned it. She points out that the National PBS really, its brand drifted into this kind of ideological echo chamber. And that, you know, taxpayers got tired of funding one-sided content. I mean, she was honest. She called it out. She defended local programming for Wyoming PBS because I really think that's right. It still does really well from the coverage, like I said, of the Capitol stuff, the political stuff, to all of the storytelling they do around Wyoming's history. This is, you know, how criticism can be taken seriously. And this is why it should be taken seriously by folks. PBS deserves what it's getting because it has lived in its own echo chamber for far too long. But local PBS, state by state, like Wyoming PBS, deserve a chance to try to create their own funding model outside of that federal funding and continue to go. And I suspect that they have lots of people in the state that would be willing to help get them the funding they need to continue the really, really good storytelling that they do and the news that they do. Because I certainly felt from reading the CEO's letter that she would be someone attuned to what the taxpayers in the state would want to fund. So yeah, I thought it was a really good piece. She did it. She owned it. And that's how you're going to fix things, right? I mean, the problem we have in politics right now is nobody wants to own anybody. Everybody just wants to spin and try to get the gotcha for the other side. So she really showed leadership. And I hope that more folks can learn from her example. Okay, so the other news story this week that was more of a breaking story this week was the fact that 8 Wyoming small towns have now lost their small town newspapers. They were basically sent a letter saying we're closing as of like now. So the Pinedale Roundup, the Platte County Record Times, the Guernsey Gazette, the Torrington Telegraph, the Lusk Herald, the Uinta County Herald, the Bridger Valley Pioneer, and the Kemmerer Gazette have all had their doors closed. Just bing, bang, boom. It is terrible because these small town papers oftentimes are the only way, particularly more elderly people, get their news. But the reality is people are changing how they consume news, particularly folks, because so much of it is digitally driven now. You probably, like me, read most of your news off of an electronic device. That's how I read all of my news. My husband and I have not had a physical newspaper delivered for ever, long time. We still get a few magazines like The Spectator and a National Review, but we do not subscribe to any actual papers. So it's unfortunate. I think a lot of folks, sort of like the Cowboy State Daily, has this, you know, has created their model to be wholly digital, papers that go more digital and do it as well as Cowboy State Daily has done it. It's a pleasant thing to read. The Casper Star has their digital, awful thing to read. It's not a pleasant website to be on or to read. But if you do it well, there's an opportunity to create a different model to give your small communities more news. So, but again, just to drive home the point, that's why more and more trusted sources, more and more places where you can hear people talking about the news is going to be so important. Yeah. So 8 small town papers in Wyoming were shut down this week. Yeah, that's too bad. Okay. 2 news stories around wolves and game and fish that I thought I would touch upon. First one is this really story that a year ago just made my blood boil. Cody Roberts, the guy who ran down a wolf with a snowmobile, taped its mouth shut, dragged it into a bar like it was a trophy while it was still alive and while it was terrified, and then eventually, after getting his kicks and giggles, took it into the back of the bar, outside in the back, and killed it. He is now the subject of a grand jury investigation. And to that, I can only say, good. Yay. I'm glad. When this story broke a year ago, it's more than a year ago, it really was national and international news. I saw it on an international paper that I read the first time. And the reality is the news story shouldn't have been. Why? Because it should have never been a story in the first place. Because the initial punishment, the $250 fine with no jail, no hearing, nothing, just a slap on the wrist and a pat on the back, that should have never happened. And I put the blame squarely on Wyoming Game and Fish because they said nothing. They did not at any point talk about the fact that there was another option that their game warden walked away from. The agency circled the wagons, and it wasn't until months and months later when the TRW committee met. Actually, it was the working group that they put together to try to deal with this subject, met, and upon extensive discussions with Brian Nesvik, who was then the Game and Fish, the head of the Game and Fish, a question was asked about whether there was any other option or something to that effect. And Nesvik had to say, well, yes, actually, game wardens have the discretion to say that, no, you're not going to just plead out this ticket right here and now and pay your $250 fine. You're going to go before a judge. And in that case, Sure, it could just still be the $250 fine, but it could also be more or less, because the person getting the fine also has that option to say, hey, listen, I'm not paying the fine. I want to go before a judge because I'm innocent. The game warden did not exercise that discretion. He went ahead and just said, yeah, $250, great. That sounds good. It's all good. Pay it and be done. I have not heard a single Wyomingite, not a rancher, not a hunter, not a legislator, who has defended what the guy did. Because the reality is, real men don't torture animals for sport. For centuries, that practice has been considered inhuman and highly suspicious in terms of one's mental health. Torturing animals for sport is not something that a normal, healthy male or female is going to do. Now, listen, predator control is a legitimate issue. It's one in which the state grapples with. But running over wildlife with a machine or a snowmobile, that isn't management. And I have yet to have anybody make a robust defense of that. It might be a one-off. I'm sure, and we heard from the Stalkers Association giving examples that there might be a moment when a rancher on his ranch out in the middle of nowhere sees a coyote and happens to be close enough, and he knows that it's been killing whatever, his lambs, his calves, and bump, bump, and it's done, and runs over it. That's an exception of which we are not talking about. What we're talking about is people that legitimately do this for sport. I mean, we know in the western part of the state that there are people as well as ranchers who are making money, letting private citizens who come into this state like a tourism destination, like to practice blood sports, to run down coyotes with snowmobiles and foxes and whatever poor animal happens to dart out in front of them. While they're doing that, this is not legitimate predator control, and it is also not legitimate sport in any way. I mean, the hunters that I talked to, horrified by the story and what it means, because it certainly doesn't rise to the level of fair chase and all of the standards by which real hunters practice. And here's the thing. I mean, running over wildlife with a machine isn't management. It is cruelty. And the wolves themselves, they're not the villains here. They're just animals, okay? They have no agency in this culture war whatsoever. This is what makes me so angry about this issue, is that people who are angry about the war that's waged with the reintroduction of these wolves want to take it out on the wolves. Their answer is never, what is the right policy? The answer is always, we're going to pursue this policy to try to do as much damage to these animals as possible. Wolves are not the villain here. Coyotes are not the villain here. Humans have complete control over the predation. We absolutely have the right to do predator control, and we can do that. Maybe, you know, you think that it should be about the animal itself, but it shouldn't, right? The right and the left have been fighting over this issue for so long, and crossed in and sort of caught in the crossfires are these poor animals that I cannot fathom how and why we can't recognize that they don't have agency in this. They're just here. They're just trying to do their thing because they were reintroduced. Yes, part of their thing, horrifyingly, is killing people's livelihoods. It is killing livestock. And we should give those ranchers all the tools necessary. But we should also recognize that there are lots of tools that Wyoming, even you know, at the university, we are not pursuing. And the future of ranch management for so many of the younger generations coming up is going to look a lot different than what it looks like now. And we should allow those kinds of tools to be readily introduced in Wyoming that aren't just lethal measures, because there's lots of ways to practice predator control that aren't lethal. For the folks that want to only use lethal, then use lethal. But there are lots of other ways. We've seen it range riding. We've seen the drones. We've seen the flags. We've seen the, there's all kinds of ways. And I got involved in this issue a year ago and found some of these techniques to be really fascinating. Talking to folks who use them, ranchers in very remote locations in mountainous regions in Colorado and Montana that really swear by them. That would be smart. It would take the emotion out of this, because like I said, I feel like so much of the emotion around this is being taken out on these animals on both sides, right? We have folks on the left that treat these animals like they're, you know, your pets, like my dogs. Wolves are not dogs. They are not domestic animals. They are wild animals. They are going to hunt and kill. That is their job. Now, some of the best predator control in wolves are the wolves themselves. You know, the number one killer of wolves is wolves left in the natural habitat. They tend to self-select and kill each other because of competition and all of the other things. In so many ways, we have to find a way to work through this issue where we recognize the animals aren't the villains, right? And I know that making them the villains sells newspapers. I mean, you know, you get clicks when you put pictures of ferocious looking wolves and you say a wolf killed a whatever, and then everybody's, oh, because that's great and people love that. But the reality is these animals are not villains. They're just doing what they do. They have no agency in the culture war. And it's an endless battle, right? Because there was also a news story this week that another federal judge, after a group from the left filed suit, is now considering putting the wolves back on the endangered species list. You have people on the left that think that absolutely no predator control should ever happen for wolves. You have people on the right who think we should just kill them to extinction again. Neither one of those is a healthy view. And neither one of those things are actually going to happen. For the folks on the right who think that we're going to someday kill them to extinction again in the lower 48, we will never do that. That's never going to happen. People on the left who think we're going to just allow wolves to run rampant and destroy the, you know, generational ag industries in the West, that's never going to happen either. We have to come to the table realistically and try to find a happy ground. But in the meantime, Wyoming does not need the black eye that the Cody Roberts story gave us. And we need to be able to look ourselves in the, you know, in the mirror and say, have we done everything that we can? So I'm glad there's a grand jury. I hope it leads to real accountability. Because if we don't uphold basic decency, we lose something deeper than the political ground here or the culture war. We lose our moral compass, right? We lose that moral compass. And it takes, I think, people that recognize how important it is to keep that moral compass in place. There should be accountability here because it wasn't just a walk in the, I mean, it wasn't just torturing an animal, taping it, bringing it into a bar while it's alive and terrified. This is certainly not the ethics of hunting or the treatment of wild animals I was raised on by my father, by my uncles, by men who were hunters, men who believed strongly, men who took the time to every year get those rifles out, practice their target shooting, make sure that they were back again at the top of their game. Why? Because they didn't want an animal to suffer. These were men who, you know, were in the ag industry, who raised animals for meat, but they understood they did not want animals to suffer. We've lost our moral compass when we think that somebody like Cody Roberts should just get a slap on the wrist for doing what he did and encouraging others to think that they should do that sort of thing. So good. That's great. I'm glad to see it. Okay. Another story, big breaking news from last week, it was late last week, early this week, was that State Senator Darren Smith has been nominated by President Trump to serve as the next U.S. attorney for the District of Wyoming. So if he is confirmed, he'll be responsible for prosecuting pretty much all of the federal crimes in the state, including serious felonies on the Wind River Reservation, as well as within our national parks. So I don't know how much time Senator Smith has actually spent practicing law. I know that he is a lawyer. I don't know if he's actually been in the courtroom or spent time, but this is a political appointment, so that's not unusual. But the job is huge. So, I mean, it's a big deal. It's all of the really big, ugly crimes. So we need someone obviously good in that position. I hope he's up for it. I know our federal delegation was very happy. They had lots of quotes in the paper about this, you know, backing him, which of course they would because this is a Republican administration. This is their nominee. So he'll now have to go through that confirmation process, all the background checks, all the work then before the Senate. Obviously, we have the national news. We have issues with the Senate getting through confirmations. But I have talked to a few folks in DC, and it seems like these appointments will not drag as much as some of the other more highly political appointments. So perhaps we might see this done by the end of this year. We'll see. Once he is confirmed, though, he will have to step down from the state legislature to take that role. So that seat will then go through the vacancy process where the governor will declare the vacancy. The state party will notify those precinct folks and we'll get someone, three choices chosen before the county commissioners. It is a multi-county seat. That seat sits in Laramie County and in Platte County. It's weighted just a little bit more for Laramie County than Platte, but both of those the county commissioner suites will be the ones picking the one out of the three that the precinct people pick. That's interesting, exciting, interesting news. Okay, well, that's as much as I want to go through today. We've got some big meetings. We've got judiciary meeting. There'll be another education meeting. I believe appropriations will be meeting through the fall. Appropriations is going to really start to take the spotlight as we get into the governor's budget and we get into, you know, the first readings of the governor's budget. So I will be covering those extensively, hopefully having some guests from appropriation coming on to talk about what's going on. And so should be a fun and interesting and exciting fall. So that's it for this week. Thanks for letting me just sit down and talk with you. I've missed these solo episodes. It's nice to pull up the mic and just kind of dig into the stories that are out there that we're all talking about. I'm Amy Edmonds. This is Let's Talk Wyoming. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you, by the way, for those who have helped with the cost of underwriting this. I really, really appreciate it. And of course, you'll be getting personal notes from me as well. But I really appreciate it. This has been a labor of love, a passion project. And I'm so grateful for those who want to stand with me and help me to produce the show. Okay. As always, have a wonderful weekend, Wyoming, in the gorgeous and beautiful state of Wyoming. Take care. Bye-bye.